Welcome to Be Unbelievable. I'm Doug Wick, and today we're talking about the real side of business, leadership, and life. You're watching Now Media Television.
Hi, and welcome to a session of Be Unbelievable, where we see differently, think bigger, and rise above everything. Today, I'm switching it up. I'm Michael Swartz, a holistic naturopath, and I will be your guest host. And I'm sitting down with the man behind this show, Doug Wick. I'm going to interview him by the way he interviews others, with honesty, depth, and the kind of questions that pull out information, because that's how we learn things. So it's not just success stories. These are really things that have occurred. I'll set the tone, and this is a behind-the-scenes conversation about identity and pressure. So here's some questions I would like to ask. Tell us a little bit about who you are and the work that you do today, Doug.
Well, today I'm a NeuroChange Solutions certified coach. I help businesses and individuals create change that sticks. People in business usually get stuck in stress, and stress means we're not collaborative, we're not creative, we're stuck more or less. And most people spend about 70% of their time stuck in stress in their business situation. So that's what we do. And what happens when you live it through stress, if you keep living that way, you eventually end up in disease, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. But the program that I do is called Change Your Mind, Create New Results, because change starts with self-awareness and changing your mind. So that's the kind of thing that's what I'm doing now, and it has given people great success in changing their lives, changing change that sticks in their professional and personal life.
Don't you find that it's hard for people to change, you know, in terms of changing their mindset? So it's interesting because from the outside, people see success, but what don't they see that help that person get to the success?
Yeah, I think, at least in my case, I find that, success is really all about responsibility. Accepting responsibility for our thoughts rather than being a victim. It's something you might be familiar with, Michael, locus of control, right? I am responsible. So I don't believe in accidents. I tend to believe that whenever something good or bad happens to us, I'm responsible for that, right? And so, I'm glad you agree, because I think, you know, if something unfortunate happens, I feel I'm still responsible for that. And it only, if only that I'm responsible for making myself or figuring out how this happened and how I can make myself better because of what that circumstance or situation was. So I don't believe in accidents. I believe in opportunities, right?
That's a great way to look at it, Doug. It really is. You know, there's two comments that I have. One is I actually work with a document called the Document of Personal Responsibility, because everything in life, you know, thought precedes form, thought precedes action. And, you know, I do symbology, right? So this is the finger we use to blame at everybody. There's other fingers we use, but this one, you know, it's your fault. You made me do it. What they don't realize is three fingers are pointing back to them.
Yep.
So we are the cause of everything in our own reality. That was so. Based on that, what part of your journey do people assume, those who know you, think it was easy because the outcome at this point of your life looks so polished?
Yeah, I don't know if people realize this, but I was deathly afraid of public speaking when I was, I can remember in high school doing anything and everything to avoid public speaking. But what happened, my mother taught me might to always, you know, when I'd come home from school, I can remember her saying, do your chores first, and then you have the rest of the day to do whatever you want, you know, and that would be the same way on the weekend or whatever it was. So I learned to do the thing I feared or the thing I disliked the most first. And when I got to college, I had to, one of the required classes was speech. And so I took it my freshman year, like, I think it was second semester. And I remember getting just a great, great teacher called Dr. Bench was his name. And he taught me to do speeches on subjects that I was familiar with or that I loved. And that alone helped me just to learn how to break the ice or get comfortable speaking and be, you know, got me headed actually into broadcasting as a career, and which was actually a very good first career that ended about 2000. But it was something that I learned how to overcome that fear of public speaking. So I guess that would be the one that I would bring up and mention. Yeah.
You know, it's funny because I can relate to that. The first time I ever had to give a presentation, a lecture, was at Drexel University. I'm from Philly originally, right?
Yeah.
So it was Drexel University, and it was going to be on like a Friday. So Tuesday, I developed a sore throat, ran a high fever. And the people I was working with said to me, look at it from an energetic point of view. You know, fever is, I use the term symbolic these days. Fever is symbolic of anger. Mm. And anger usually comes out of fear, right?
Yep, yep.
And the sore throat was either, you know, one, I didn't have the courage to express myself, or I was being imposed upon, and I may have felt that too, and yeah, couldn't swallow what was being presented. So it's really interesting, and you brought this up earlier, how the body does respond to what it is dealing with. And of course, that comes back to our belief systems. So what is the one daily responsibility or decision that you make that you feel quietly defines your leadership more now than the public win?
Well, I think, you know, a couple of things, but they all wrap up into one. I need to own my mornings. In other words, what time do I get up? What do I do in the morning? I can remember when I started in sales in radio, and how that constant rejection would just, oh gosh, I hated it. I didn't, there were times when I didn't want to get up in the morning, right? So yeah. I can remember my sales manager at the time, he said, do things that elevate you, that gets you positive. And I would listen to audio tapes first thing in the morning. Now I have a routine every morning where I get up, I meditate. I then do something that we actually coach people on in when they go through our Change Your Mind, Create New Results program, which is to do like we call it a genius journal. But what it amounts to is writing down your thoughts, write down what you don't want, what you do want, then meditate, and then write down, okay, based on all these things and what I meditated on, what actions am I going to take today to become that envisioned future that I want to be? And so I think owning my mornings, being very ritualistic, routine, getting into a habit of the right mindset, positively thinking and feeling, so I can prepare and take action to achieve what I want, because I've got a vision of who I want to become, and I need to act that way as if I'm already there by what I do in the morning.
Yeah, that is such a fabulous routine. And I do something similar. I call it programming. I look at the human mind as the software engineer and the brain as the hard drive. And it actuates whatever directives I put in. And I don't think that people take enough time and don't discipline themselves to utilize that time. You know, I think we are a society that we are so busy with our games that one day our thumbs are going to be as big as our ears and we'll have little tiny fingers, but just giant thumbs.
Yeah, I just saw a YouTube video that just reinforced what I do in the morning that said, the first thing you shouldn't do for at least the first 30 to 60 minutes is don't get on your phone, because you start scrolling, you're pulled in another direction. So your routine matches very well with what we teach people to do and change your mind, create new results. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, put the program in, write it down, speak it out, see it, visualize it. You know, imagination is a fabulous tool. Actually, it's one of the spiritual gifts that we have.
Yes.
Anyway, in a minute or so, another minute, we got a minute before we have to go out and take a commercial break. Broadcasting, right?
Yep.
And so is there any like real quick discipline hint that you could give people?
Yeah, you know, I do one other discipline every evening. I go for a walk. Okay. About a 30, 45 minute walk, 2 miles, 3 miles. And don't think, just do it. That's the only, you know, if you start thinking about it, you'll come up with reasons why not to. And yeah, that's the body ruling the mind. We can't change when we allow the body to rule us, to rule our mind.
A great point. And we'll pick up on that next, because I want to take you to the moments in your life that tested you, Doug, because breakthroughs always have a cost. There's always a price tag associated with everything. Anyway, folks, hang in. Got a great conversation going, and we'll be back momentarily.
Stay with us. More honest insight and real-world perspective from business owners is coming up on Be Unbelievable. And we're back. I'm Doug Wick, and this is Be Unbelievable on Now Media Television. Let's continue.
Hi, and welcome back to our show, Be Unbelievable. I'm Michael Schwartz, as I said earlier, naturopathic, and practice that holistically. Anyway, I am here with Doug Wick, and now we're going to get to the defining challenge, which we left off with, and that was the moment where belief either breaks you or becomes real. And so much of that goes on in life. So, Doug, let me ask you, what was the defining challenge, or as we all face, obstacles, or the moment that really put you to the test?
Well, in 2012, I discovered I had acute myeloid leukemia. I entered the hospital with 84% of my bone marrow cancerous. And it got worse because the first week I was in, when they did the test, they found out I had something called monosomy 7. And monosomy 7, for people with acute myeloid leukemia, it means you got about a 3% chance of survival. So the only treatment for AML, or acute myeloid leukemia, is a bone marrow transplant. And in order to qualify for a bone marrow transplant, you have to get your bone marrow, the cancer in your bone marrow, down to less than 10%. Well, I was quite a ways from that. And so I went through 5 chemotherapies. Those only got my cancer down to about 42%. And so at that point, they said, "Hey, Doug, we don't have any other options. The only option left is a clinical trial." And so at that point, they suggested I go home and contemplate what I wanted to do, in terms of, did I want to go somewhere else? Because there were other medical, you know, MD Anderson in Houston and Sloan Kettering in New York that may be better for the facilities. We had kind of decided that it made more sense for our support to stay in Iowa City, where we were at the University of Iowa. And while I was home for about 3 days, considering this, I had to go to the infusion center because my blood counts were low. And a doctor there at the infusion center was in charge of my infusions. Called us into her office, and she said, asked us what was going on, what our options were. And she just, in essence, said, "Doug," my wife was there as well. She said, "At some point, instead of going on with treatments and so forth. You just take the little time you have left to spend time with your loved ones. And my wife, who at the time was, she was bawling, but I was mad because I never thought for some reason that I was going to die. Because when I'd gotten into the hospital, I'd started practicing meditation. A friend of mine introduced me to the book by Dr. Joe Dispenza, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. I had another practice that I'd done with meditation that was a sermon from Jim Rosenberg that was called How to Cross Your Red Sea. I'd been practicing that. Those two things really made me feel like I could figure out, or I could take responsibility, practice this meditation, practice, have faith in God, and that I was going to be able to be accountable to manage my health and get through this. So that doctor talking to me and telling me, you know, was really kind of that obstacle or challenge that really tested me at that point. Yeah.
So what did you believe you could not do back then? And what was at stake if you failed? Your identity, finances? I mean, really, what was going on?
Well, I think the thing that I thought I couldn't do was to give up, you know, because giving up. And I felt I had to take responsibility for my health, you know, beyond what the doctors were doing. I had to get involved and actually search for other ways, or just simply take accountability for doing what was necessary to be helpful. And really what was at stake was my family. I felt had a very high responsibility toward them. What I first did was to beat myself up because I went, you know, I'm responsible for getting into this position. And I felt like that was counterproductive. And so I had to eventually just let that go and realize, I think it was something I called selfish self-pity. It's where you take responsibility, but because you have gotten into this place, you also feel guilty, right? Yeah, and so absolutely. That's something I had to let go. And I ended up, you know, practicing through the meditation, a mental rehearsal that I could get rid of that responsibility or that selfish self-pity and change and create a new envisioned future for myself. But it took a lot of, I guess you'd call energy to do that, right?
Oh, absolutely. A couple of things came to mind. One of them was I came across, I don't remember where I heard it. I'll go there first, but it was brilliant. And it may have been from a minister and or a rabbi or an amen, somebody, because being curious in life, I sought out every religion to understand what separates us and why we're not united as people, because there's only one God. But that's a whole other story. Anyway, yeah. The statement was, God loves active participation, not passive acceptance. And you taking, and your tendency, which I think we all have, is to beat ourselves up about this, that, and the other, and blame ourselves and or, you know, the emotional finger, blaming others, as opposed to taking the responsibility for ourselves.
Which doesn't do any good. If you blame others, then you are taking, releasing, you're a victim. You're releasing responsibility for the outcome to somebody else. And that does you no good at all.
Well, actually, there is a safety catch there because, hey, I'm not responsible for that failure. Joe told me, I mean, I asked him what to do. He told me what to do. And so it's Joe's fault. Yeah. I'm good. Joe's bad.
Yeah. 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 It doesn't get you anywhere.
Really.
You just remain a victim. Yeah.
You know, and so many people walk around with that level of consciousness. So going through what you went through when you were going through it, who did you have to disappoint? Because there's got to be some people there. Who did you have to confront? And I'm sure part of that was you. Yeah. And who did you outgrow in that season in order to keep yourself moving forward with good heart, good spirit?
Well, one of the things that I did when I got to the hospital, which the first thing I had to confront was that responsibility. And I know there are people out there that would say, Doug, you weren't responsible for getting cancer. I disagree with that. I think, you know, that we, by our thoughts, by our actions, by our behaviors, we unconsciously perhaps are responsible, but we still are responsible. But when I got to the hospital, one of the things I refused to do was to wear those embarrassing gowns I would get up every morning and I would dress as if I was being at work. And I actually ended up working in the hospital while I was there. They had really good internet, so I could do that. And I was meeting with customers by phone or on, you know, like this Zoom. Of course, it was GoToMeeting back then. But I disappointed the nurses. I disappointed the doctors. I remember one doctor who particularly was upset because what I would do, because I was working, I would put a sign up that said I was in a meeting or meditating, right? And I can remember one of my friends dropped in and I didn't know until like 6 months after I got out of the hospital that he had visited because he came to my room. There was a sign on the door that said I was in a meeting. He walked in and I just went, because I thought it was a nurse. I didn't even look up from my screen and just shoot him away. And I didn't even know he had ever visited me in the hospital. So that was probably one of the biggest things. And the other thing, my wife, you know, imagine having to, I was 7 months in the hospital, Michael. Imagine having to survive on hospital food for 7 months. Thankfully, my wife at the time, she came almost every day at lunchtime and she brought food that, you know, sandwiches, whatever, something that she made that was, it was like a moment of pleasure, of normalcy that really helped me get through that time frame in there. So, yeah.
You would think in a hospital of all places that the diet would be unbelievably healthy. But in a, you know, the consciousness of the nutritionists, you know, who don't follow the path of nature as a naturopath, you know, the hospital should have doctors of naturopathy on staff. I think that's the future.
Yeah.
But we are so caught up, you know, I flash on Dr. Forget not Spock, but the McCoy. Yep. In Star Trek, and he looks back at our time period and said, how barbaric. And so, yeah. Anyway, so much for Star Trek. Next, when we come back, I wanted to ask about what challenged you internally first, because the outer always wins and always, but everything, like we said earlier, it starts from the within. Actually, there's a universal teaching. What is within will manifest without. So I'd like to tap into your within when we come back.
Stay with us. More honest insight and real world perspective from business owners is coming up on Be Unbelievable. And we're back. I'm Doug Wick, and this is Be Unbelievable on Now Media Television. Let's continue.
We're back. Remember that from, Shining, right? Yeah. We're back. Anyway, I'm Michael Schwartz, holistic naturopath, and I'm still with Doug Wick. We're having a really fascinating conversation about Dick's journey through life. I mean, really inspirational. And this is the part that separates motivation from transformation. What shifted inside before anything changed outside? So what changed first for you, Doug? I know you said earlier was, I guess, the will to survive, you know, but what shifted first? How you thought, how you felt, or how you acted and or reacted? Which came first?
It's certainly my thoughts. You know, I think you mentioned as within, so without. What happened at first, I can remember the doctor, this was on a Saturday, my doctor came in and said, you've got acute myeloid leukemia. You're going to be in the hospital for a year. You're not going to be able to work. And that's only if you survive. And I can remember thinking, you know, my wife didn't work. I had a $750,000 life insurance policy. I didn't know what my insurance was going to cover. And I just said to the doctor, I said, shoot me now. You know, rather than going bankrupt in, you know, at least my family will have something. So I said that. And I can remember, this is that selfish self-pity. I just started, I'm embarrassed, but it was how I respond. I started swearing, cussing, you name it. I probably went on for about 15 minutes or longer, just, you know, blaming myself and cursing. And I can remember my son, my middle son. I can't imagine how bad it was to be in that room, but he stopped me and he said, Dad, I can't believe you're saying this. This is so different from what you've taught us. Mm. And I like to say, Michael, that was it. I just buttoned up and but I did button up. I was probably internally still saying it because I was still, you know, taking responsibility and blaming myself. But I believe that was kind of like a little trigger for me to go, yeah, well, I'm not following my own, you know? And I realized this was not, I was responsible, but the beauty of being responsible is that I caused this. I can cause it to change as well. That's the beauty of that thinking, is that ability to not to make that switch. Just because you're responsible for causing something also means you can cause it to change. And in the coaching that I still do, which is scaling up, we advocate the principles of good to great. Jim Collins, he had interviewed Jim Stockdale, who was the highest ranking official in the Vietnam War who was in prison. And he came up with something called the Stockdale principle, which is that you must recognize and have unwavering faith that, I'm going to read it here from my notes, that you can prevail in the end, regardless of the difficulties. And at the same time, have the discipline to confront the most brutal facts of your current reality, whatever they may be. He said, I never lost faith that at the end of the story, I never doubted that not only would I get out or survive, but I would also prevail in the end and turn the experience into the defining event of my life, which in retrospect, I would not trade. And that inspired me and made me believe that I can get through this. And if I do, it will be the defining moment of my life. That's what it's proven to be.
No, absolutely. You know, I'm a firm believer that the mind is both cause and cure. Yes. And, you know, my other thing is just give the body what it requires. And it's not medicine necessarily. It's vitamins, minerals, herbs, organic food, clean water, good books, good movies, clean thoughts.
Yes.
It grows you. So let me ask you, Doug, was there a belief that you had to release, or did you have to move into something new that may have been a little challenging or questionable? And what belief did have to die for the next version of you to come back to life?
Yeah, I think, you know, both are true. I had to release something and I had to believe something new. But most importantly, I had to release that idea that this was hopeless. You know, yeah. I didn't bathe in that thought that I couldn't do this or I couldn't. I didn't put the responsibility on my doctors. I put the responsibility on myself. I've been used to creating dashboards for businesses and for my own business. And so what I did was I created a dashboard that included meditating and not just meditating once a day, but 2-3 times. Anytime I had a fear or a doubt, I would meditate. I could wake up at 2 a.m. in the morning and go, how am I going to get through this? Instead of dwelling on that thought, I would meditate. And so than I had exercising, because there's nothing worse than just staying in bed and not, you know, doing anything. So I exercised. I made sure I had exercises that I could do. They had a bike there that I could ride, and I would walk up and down the hallways and so forth. I ate a little bit differently, not tremendously different, but I made sure I was eating healthy. I consciously applied those mental thoughts. Every morning I would do affirmations, and then of course, envisioned what my envisioned future would be and how happy I would feel when I got through this and conquered that. So those were the things that I had to get release, but also I had to envision how I was going to get through this and what it was going to feel like when I actually, and that was, I think that was the key to when the doctor told me, you know, spend the time you have remaining, I realized that that's the part I wasn't doing. I wasn't envisioning as if I was already through this. And I envisioned a going to Hawaii. My wife always wanted to go to Hawaii. I was going to be there. I was going to be speaking to a group about how I had defeated cancer. And it was an all expense paid trip. So we were enjoying ourselves and just having a great time. But it was an envision that actually made me cry when I would come out of my meditation. And shortly after that is when the miraculous message came on my computer. So it was, it was a combination of both, Michael.
You know, it's amazing that you bring that up, because it is mind over matter. And it's interesting how few people are willing to give up a belief in order to capture a new one. Because, you know, for me, the analogy I use is like you're driving a car, you're coming up to a hill, you don't know what's on the other side. And you don't know, it's like in life, until you get to the top of the hill, now your vision is expanded. There's something new out there. But if you hold on to the past, you can't see tomorrow.
Yeah, we spend so much time in the past. 90-95% of the time, we are spending time in the past, and our days are the same as they were yesterday. You know,
well, we live by patterns of habit. Yep. Behavior patterns. And I write about those and teach them with my clients.
Yep.
What felt uncomfortable about changing? What part of your growth felt like grief? Because you knew, one, you couldn't go back. You had to give something up. People, friends, family, business. What? What was the most uncomfortable thing about changing? Because this is the fear most people have.
Yeah, and I don't think I felt any grief, because I think I was so focused on my future, what I had to do to have that envisioned future. So it all felt uncomfortable from the standpoint of that, the policies of the hospital. I had to change. I had to get past that and be comfortable telling them, listen, I'm going to work. You know, one of the nurses actually loved having me as a patient, because he never had to come in, you know, so he would choose me every day, you know, as a patient. But, you know, having that new vision, doing the meditation, just following my dashboard, all of it was somewhat uncomfortable, but it was from a standpoint of being uncomfortable. It wasn't all that uncomfortable, because I knew that's what I had to do in order to achieve the result or the outcome that I.
So, and you bring up a good point. What practice would you share with people, or what, and discipline or boundary became in your own mind non-negotiable?
Okay.
Can't change it. Not going to change it. This is the new way. This is what I'm sticking to.
Yeah. I think again, I'll go back to the thought that we've already talked about, Michael, which is I'm responsible. I think that yeah. Intentional, you know, I'm responsible for my intentions, for my vision, for everything that's occurring in my life. I need to take responsibility I'm responsible for my health. I don't know somewhere I read that only 20% of our health we can give to doctors. The rest of it is on us. And I think too many people, when they go in the hospital, they go, oh, I'm going to let the doctor. You know, it's all about but it's a lot of it is right here in between our ears. Whether we believe we can, you know, achieve something or not It's right here. And I think accountability is the most important, having that locus of control that I am responsible for this outcome instead of being a victim. That's what I think, Michael, is the most important thing.
I would concur. It's unfortunate that people don't think more like you. Hopefully, as people tune into the show and you're hosting and guiding them, that they'll get the message. We're coming up to our final segment, and I'm going to talk to this in terms of results and legacy and what became possible and what listeners can apply almost immediately. So they have something to take away and say, I want to be like Doug. I want to conquer what I'm dealing with because I think it's killing me. Anyway, we'll be back after these messages.
Stay with us. More honest insight and real world perspective from business owners is coming up on Be Unbelievable. And we're back. I'm Doug Wick, and this is Be Unbelievable on Now Media Television. Let's continue.
All right. Welcome back to our final segment of Be Unbelievable. Doug did it. You can do it. I'm Michael Schwartz, a holistic naturopath, and I'm here with Doug Wick. And now we land the plane because we've been all over the sky about wonderful things that you all can do for yourselves. What changed on the other side and what anyone watching can take from it, Doug? So what became or what is possible on the other side of the changes that you went through? What opened up opportunities? Relationships? What about clarity of purpose and confidence in being able to move forward that didn't exist before in your professional and personal life?
Yeah, and I think the going through the reading the book, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, having, you know, my faith that I had already, and having practiced meditation, the one thing that Dispenza mentioned that I think changed my perspective about what's possible. And that was, he mentioned, because he doesn't talk about God in the book like I reference God, but he said universal intelligence or universal power, it loves us more than we love ourselves.
Amen.
And when I really get a picture of that or get a feeling of it, it makes me cry, you know, and that understanding made everything possible. If God loves us more than we love ourselves, then any obstacle, any challenge, if he loves us, you can imagine I love my children this same way, right? If there's an obstacle or a challenge that I gave my child, it was because I loved them and they needed to somehow overcome that obstacle, overcome that and become better, right?
Yeah, and so
what I try to do anytime I get an obstacle, and it may not happen immediately, but it's something that I generally become aware of, is that if I have a problem or if I have a challenge, if God is giving me that challenge, he's doing it because he loves me and I can overcome that. And it's really to unleash my potential. And that's probably the most valuable thing I think somebody, what came to me. And there may be times when I don't want to go over that, and maybe I won't. But if I realize and come to grips with the idea that this challenge is not a challenge, this accident or whatever happened, instead of going, oh, how unfortunate, where's the good in this, Father? It may take years to appear. When I got divorced in 2015, it took years for some of the good that came from that to appear. How I now get along with my children is much better because of that split, unfortunately, you know. But it, those things, if you always look for the good appears, Michael. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And everything happens for a reason. That's the other thing. And people don't stop to question. And you need to. Everybody needs to. So let me ask you something, Doug. How did your results, either personally, professionally, begin to shift? What was the first measurable sign because I'm all about signs and symbols within yourself that you knew the shift was beginning to work.
This is funny, actually, because in the meditation process, Dr. Joe always, he kind of ends with asking universal intelligence to, you know, if we've come in contact with universal, let there be a sign. Well, I got nothing, mostly during the hospital, but I can remember one instant. Yeah, it was maybe a couple of months in. I was been meditating every day, you know, 2-3 times a day. And I can remember a nurse coming into my private room, kind of pulling back the curtain and going, "Oh, I thought you were someone else." And then she left. And I went, "Oh, wow. I am breaking the habit of being myself." She doesn't even think, you know, and it was fleeting. It was really small, but it was something that just gave me a little hope. And then, you know, as I've shared with you, you know, probably 2-3 months later when things were really bad, I got that, you know, that message on my computer that said,
"You're cured."
Yeah, my cancer cured. And it was, you know, unbelievable. It only lasted for a few seconds, but that just, you know, I went into ICU like 30 minutes to an hour later, and I was completely confident. I was okay. I got better, went through the clinical trial 3 or 4 weeks later, the doctor calls me when I'm home and says, you know, the biopsy results came back and there's no trace of cancer. And it was like, yeah, wow. Yeah. So
hallelujah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
So for those who are listening and is facing similar challenges, because we all have challenges, what would you invite them to believe or do differently? What's the first brave move that they can make within the next 24 hours after hearing your message?
Well, this is something that we teach during the Change Your Mind, Create New Results training, but change begins with self-awareness. And I think that means I am responsible. I can change. And what do I need to change? In my case, it was that intention of I'm selfish, self-pity, that I'm accountable, but I'm going to blame myself. Well, you can't stay in that. You got to be aware that in that stage, that blaming yourself, you're not going to, that's responsible, but it's not responsible toward getting a result and taking action. So you've got to become self-aware. You've got to make different choices. You have got to act and behave differently. And when you do that, you're going to get different experiences. And those experiences are going to change how you feel. The result of an experience is always an emotion or a feeling. And the beauty of that new experience and feeling and emotion is it generates more new thoughts, which lead to new choices, new actions and behaviors, more experiences and more feelings and elevated emotions. When we get elevated emotions, we really believe we can do just about anything. And so that self-awareness is really, really powerful as long as it leads to, you know, making new choices and behaving and acting differently. Yeah.
Well, you know, you bring up a couple of great points. When I'm working with a client and they'll tell me something like I had a car accident, something like that, I'll say, okay, so did you ask yourself why you drew yourself to that? Yeah. Why you drew it to you? Well, they look at me like, what, are you crazy? Well, hey, God said you got dominion over everything. Everything is energy. What kind of energy were you putting out? So there is that. So let me ask you one question, Doug. What one pattern, because we are all creatures of patterns of behavior. Okay. So what is the one pattern that you see in high performers that looks like strength, you know, the facade, but is actually self-sabotaging?
Well, I think it comes back to what we just talked about, because we spend 90 to 95% of our time thinking the same thoughts we had yesterday, right? And so if we want to change or we want to get a different result, the only way we can do that is to change how we think. That's where it all starts.
Yep.
It starts with self-awareness. And so people have to begin to realize that their thoughts are confining themselves to their present reality. And if they don't change them, they can't expect a different outcome, right? They're going to keep producing the same outcome as long as they keep thinking the same way. So change begins with, and it could be, you know, just listening to this program, just like listening to your program, I got a new thought, all right? And that new thought means I'm going to make different choices, choices to my health, choices to my morning routine, whatever it is. Make those choices, all right? Behave, act differently. That'll create new experiences that lead to new emotions and feelings. And you'll get on that treadmill, which is a good treadmill to be on, or that, you know, that pattern.
Highway with a division. I always look at it. Life is like you're on a path. You know, in fact, Jesus teaches that there's a narrow path that leads to the kingdom within, and everybody thinks they're on it, but the reality is they may not very well be. Because here's a couple of things that people don't understand, and I think you do because you've lived it. And that is, you know, there's a teaching where he says, ask and ye shall receive. Well, what people don't realize is that the human brain is an electromagnetic generator.
That's right.
And they are asking at a subconscious level. So whatever's coming at you, whatever's in your life, you asked for it. The other thing that I use to back that up is taught to have, and says in the Old Testament and New, you have to have eyes to see and ears to hear. So you can see the energy behind what's being presented to you and hear the truth behind, you know, somebody else's agenda. And it's those kinds of things.
You know, that you mentioned that this is the thing that I think you're pointing to. 90 to 95% of our thoughts are unconscious. Yeah. That's why change starts with self-awareness. And so if we can become aware, then we have the path to change. And then we need to have that envisioned future of what we want to become.
And on that note, if there's one thing you've all learned to be unbelievable, what is it? So no matter where you are or what you're facing, remember, miraculous possibilities are already existing within you. The choice is whether or not you're willing to believe that, to change that, and whether you are willing to be unbelievable. Doug, thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being awesome.